It is Wednesday, March 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the United States will impose new sanctions against North Korea over the poisoning death of leader Kim Jong-un's half-brother. The brutal conflict in Syria's eastern Ghouta region continues, and the music group Imagine Dragons has a new single and a new album. It's all ahead. The United States says it will impose new economic sanctions on North Korea for using a lethal chemical nerve agent in last year's assassination of the estranged half-brother of leader Kim Jong-un. The U.S. State Department announced Tuesday that it is determined that Pyongyang used the banned VX nerve agent to kill Kim Jong-nam on February 13, 2017, as he walked through Kuala Lumpur's international airport. Two women are on trial for Kim Jong-nam's murder. The women claim they were tricked by North Korean agents who told them they were taking part in a prank television show. Kim Jong-nam was estranged from Kim Jong-un. I asked VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain how U.S. officials reached their conclusion that the lethal chemical nerve agent was used in the killing.
Well, that's an excellent question, Sarah, and unfortunately, they have not explained how they reached this conclusion. I know that Malaysian police had said last month that the banned VX nerve agent, which is the most powerful nerve agent ever created, which can be used in gas or a thick liquid form, was used. But the State Department said it had determined that the North Korean government was behind the assassination and that the North Korean government had used chemical weapons to assassinate someone. And the State Department strongly condemned that and said that this just shows that no form of weapons of mass destruction program in North Korea can be tolerated.
Yeah, and the circumstances around this were very strange. I mean, there's an Indonesian woman and a Vietnamese woman are standing trial for this. They said they thought they were taking part in a prank television show, and there are reports that it was actually sprayed in Kim's face. I've also heard that it was smeared in his face, but this certainly worked incredibly fast in killing him.
You're right, and it is. It's very, very strange circumstances. And as you say, there's an ongoing trial, and the women still say that they thought it was a prank. And the State Department is now saying that whatever role these women played, the North Korean government was behind it. And as you mentioned, that Kim Jong-nam is a half-brother of the current North Korean leader, and he was the son of one of the many sons of Kim Jong-il by a different mistress than Kim Jong-un, and at one point was thought to be a possible heir. So this is all sort of a bunch of intrigue and interesting information leading up to his death.
Is it known how these new sanctions would work? Because the United States already has quite extensive sanctions against North Korea.
That's right, Sarah. And to be honest, these new sanctions appear to be largely symbolic. Basically, it would prohibit any U.S. arms sales to North Korea or any sort of sensitive goods or technology under national security concerns, which, of course, the U.S. has no relations with North Korea and wouldn't be doing that anyway. So this seems more like the U.S. just saying, look, you know, we know that the North Korean government is behind this and we're condemning the use of chemical weapons. And North Korea is believed to have large stockpiles of chemical weapons. And there are also, there's a UN report that says that Pyongyang has supplied chemical weapons and expertise to Syrian President Assad.
This is also occurring, as North Korea has suggested, they're beginning to have talks with South Korean officials. And North Korea has also said it might discuss getting rid of its nuclear weapons. And this has just happened within the last few days.
Right, exactly, Sarah. That kind of struck me, the timing of this late Tuesday from State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert, on a day when there was a lot of good news about a kind of an unexpected North Korean willingness to say, yes, we're willing to talk about a denuclearized peninsula, and President Trump saying this is a very positive development, And then this coming from the State Department, just the timing of it also was a little bit kind of, you know, raised some eyebrow.
VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Hi, Sarah. You know, from time to time I come into the studio and I ask you, do you know what day today is? You probably hate it. I apologize, but I'm going to ask you all the same. Do you know what today is?
No, other than March 7th. No.
If you were on social media, you would know instantly that today is National Cereal Day.
Wow.
Cereal, like breakfast cereal, yeah. That kind of thing. And it's just sort of a, you know, fun hashtag, people tweeting all about their favorite, you know, all those sugar, soppy kind of cereals as kids. The U.S. Department of Defense actually tweeted out a very good video of how the four members of the four branches eat cereal in the morning. It's very much kind of taking fun, you know, some prods at the sort of expectations of each of the service branches. People tweeting out, I mean, there's people saying, of course, cereal killer, people trying to change the name of cereal. So, you know, things like Children of the Cornflakes or, you know, Lucky Harms or that kind of thing. Anyway, so that's out there right now. But, you know, to be fully serious, actually, what is really kind of big today is the Trump White House. Now, as a search term. Now, you probably know yesterday the president tweeted out, I'm going to pull it up, it just ran away from me right here. President tweeted out before his press conference with the Swedish prime minister, the new fake news narrative is that there's chaos in the White House. Wrong. People always come and go, etc., etc. There is no chaos, only great energy, exclamation point. And he repeated that when he was speaking with the Swedish prime minister. And of course, all of this was before the head of his economic conference, Gary Cohn, suddenly announced his departure in the wake of this possible tariff war. So people are really kind of talking about this whole idea of chaos at the White House. Here's Anna Navarro. She's a commentator on CNN. Seriously, who needs House of Cards when we have the Trump administration? The incompetence, corruption, depravity, scheming, backstabbing, drama, and intrigue in this White House far outdoes anything on TV. So I guess we found somebody who dislikes the president more than Sam Nunberg. in specifically referencing Sam Nunberg, David Frum had tweeted out this. There was some criticism about whether the media was taking advantage of this man on Monday, whether he was having a nervous breakdown. David Frum says, if the principle is that the press cannot interview mentally unbalanced people, .. Well, that's certainly going to complicate the task of covering the Trump White House. Keep in mind, David Frum is a Republican. Mm-hmm. Here's also somebody who clearly is not a fan of the president. Fun fact, almost everybody that leaves the Trump White House finds a job working for Bob Mueller. So people, you know, doing what they will. But obviously, I think it really does underscore very quickly, you know, this concern that, you know, boy, the White House does seem to be in a bit of turmoil. And, you know, people that I think that makes people a little nervous.
And they're wondering who could be next.
Who could be next. Exactly.
Right. Thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is in Ethiopia on the first stop of his first official visit to Africa. Some financial markets drop after President Trump's top economic advisor quits. A suicide blast kills a top official in Afghanistan. And Sri Lanka is under a state of emergency after deadly ethnic clashes. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Penguins are among the most common birds in Antarctica. Of all the Antarctic penguin species, only two, the Adelie and Emperor, are known to breed along the shorelines and islands that surround the entire continent. A new study led by researchers from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution outlines the discovery of a previously unknown supercolony of more than 1.5 million Adelie penguins living on the Danger Islands off the northernmost tip of the Antarctic Peninsula. Some scientists had thought that the number of this penguin species had been steadily declining over the past 40 years. The researchers think that among the reasons the penguin supercolonies have gone unnoticed for such a long time may be due to the remoteness of the Danger Islands and the dangerous waters that surround them. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the group Imagine Dragons has a new single out, and we'll get to hear some of it. The warring parties in Syria's eastern Ghouta region appear to be digging in, with a Syrian Observatory for Human Rights reporting the presence of hundreds of pro-regime militia fighters moving into the front lines. Meanwhile, a spokesman for one of the main rebel groups in the enclave vows to defend it and rejects a Russian proposal for talks on a withdrawal. In Washington, State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert denounced Russia for carrying out what she called brutal airstrikes and ignoring a February 24th UN Security Council demand for a ceasefire.
Russia has agreed to unhindered humanitarian access in numerous UN Security Council resolutions, including UNSCR's 2165, 2254, and 2401. Yet humanitarian convoys have been chronically delayed or barred by the Syrian regime, and those that do get through are wholly insufficient to meet the needs of the Syrian people. Russia has not only failed to follow through on delivering regime adherence, but it continues to conduct airstrikes in Ghouta with its own air force. Russia and Assad regime continues to ignore the terms of multiple UN Security Council resolutions. Russia repeatedly delayed the adoption of the resolution, and it's pretty clear now why they were reluctant to vote for it. They had no intention of following it.
Heather Nauert said the ongoing bombardment of eastern Ghouta demonstrates what she called the farcical nature of Russia's proposed humanitarian corridor. Some 800 civilians have died in the eastern Damascus suburb since February 18th. Meanwhile, Russia suffered its second major transport air crash of the Syrian campaign, with the aircraft crashing short of a Syrian runway, killing all 39 people on board. In December 2016, 92 people perished when a military aircraft crashed en route to Syria from Sochi. Former Ambassador James Jeffrey, a distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty this is not a serious setback for Russia's Syrian campaign.
It does underscore, however, to the Russian people just before the Russian elections that Russia is increasingly in a quagmire in Syria. You saw that with the actions by the Wagner mercenary group last month, pushing across the border and getting into a very one-sided battle with the U.S. aircraft. And the fact that while the U.S. government is, as ever, slow and inconsistent, it is moving towards a stay-on in Syria, patch up things with the Turks, and together, along with Israel, essentially put pressure on Iran to not use Syria as a platform to project power against America's allies, Jordan, Israel, Turkey, ultimately the American security system. And it's Russia which is enabling this by providing the air power that crushes the rebels, such as in eastern Ghouta, and the air defenses that make it difficult for the Israelis, the Turks, and even us to operate without some kind of deal with the Russians. So the Russians are enabling this without necessarily having thought through whether they really want Iran to be a hegemon in the region or whether they really want to see the U.S., Israel, and Turkey pushing back against that and dragging Russia into a conflict. Putin is in trouble, and the crash of this airplane will indicate that he's a long way from having withdrawn from Syria.
There's a report that the Russian military is offering Syrian rebels safe passage out of eastern Ghouta, setting out a proposal to let the insurgents surrender their last major stronghold near Damascus. So far, that has been rejected by the rebels.
We've seen this movie about 20 times since Russia got in. After much delay and hesitation, it accepts a UN resolution for a ceasefire. Then it doesn't adhere to the ceasefire, while the Syrians claim we're just fighting terrorists. Then it does these peace corridors to allow them to come out so that they don't have to go in and do the ground fighting, because the truth is the Syrian-Iranian forces do not have a lot of infantry who are reliable. And so they need this as a pressure valve to take off the pressure of the remaining fighters, because these fighters are committed, kind of like the ISIS fighters, and they'll fight in the rubble. So there's nothing good about this. There's no change about it. It doesn't indicate Russia's having a change of heart. It is simply a way to prosecute a totally evil, ethnically cleansing-oriented war.
There are reports that the Syrian government allied forces have captured about a third of eastern Ghouta.
Right, I saw that.
Does this appear to be the near the end of the rebel control of that enclave?
It could well be, but bear in mind what we have seen repeatedly is the Syrian army and even the Iranians have a hard time holding terrain. With the Syrian opposition you're dealing with, just as we were dealing with ISIS, a lightly armed but still quasi-conventional force that held territory, controlled populations, and fought kind of like infantry. What's going to happen is these people are all going to go to ground and they're going to become insurgents and terrorists.
In Syria's northwest, U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters are redeploying by the hundreds away from fighting Islamic State to reinforce other Kurds battling Turkish-led forces in Afrin. James Jeffries said that will likely cripple the U.S. campaign to destroy the remnants of the IS group. Monday, a Pentagon spokesman called it an operational pause. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. The band Imagine Dragons has a new single and a new album. I'm joined now by VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London, who has the details.
Today we're talking about one of my favorite bands in the last few years and also one of the most significant, prolific, and successful bands in the last few years, Imagine Dragons, who have a new album out. It's been out for about 10 months so far. It's called Evolve, and it is their third album, the follow-up to what was a moderate success, Smoke and Mirrors. The first album, Night Visions, about 5 years ago, gave them multiple Grammy nominations and Billboard Award nominations, and so they're back with a new album. This is the third single from the third album, so today we're going to listen to a song called Whatever It Takes from Imagine Dragons.
Why are they one of your favorite bands?
Well, I always like their style, their sound, their message, too. That's very important when a band has a message to it beyond just creating music. And this group definitely carries a message. They are from Las Vegas, where the terrible tragedy occurred last year, the casino shooting that took the lives of many, many people, 51, I believe, who were watching a country music show, innocently enough, and some random shooter out of a hotel window started to fire away. So Dan Reynolds, the lead singer, said on October 1st, we are going to remember that tragic day. We're going to stage a commemorative concert, a tribute to all of those who lost their lives. And so the band, being from Las Vegas, want to pay homage to what tragedy took place in their hometown. That's one of the things I like about the band, that they're very, very socially conscious. Dan Reynolds recently did an interview. He's the lead singer. He admitted that he deals with mental illness issues, that he's depressed, that he suffers from anxiety, bipolar disorder. He has all kinds of things going on. But they're very outspoken on a number of different issues. And he said he's getting tired of America in general. He said, there's just one tragedy after another going on in this country. Now, most recently, the school shooting in Florida. He said, when will this end? How many children have to lose their lives before our government does something about it? So Dan Reynolds is using his fame as a platform to speak out openly about his thoughts. He's also an advocate on behalf of gay rights, although he himself is not gay. He's married happily, and they have several children. His wife gave birth to two babies last year. But he said that that the LGBT community needs a voice, and he's happy to be one of those people who is a voice on behalf of that community. He said it's time, that was his words, it's time that we recognize that community, that part of America, that part of the world that deserves to be noticed. But the band Imagine Dragons have been doing this for a number of years. About a year ago or so, they even contemplated changing their names. To something else. They thought, Imagine Dragons, does that really say who we are? The guys in the band all said, Dan, yes, it does. We can't think of a better name. So he said, okay. And he went with it, and the name remains intact. All the guys in the band met at Berklee College of Music in Boston. They're all very talented musicians. And as I say, they have been successful with now what is their third album.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossing. Whatever it takes. That is Whatever It Takes by Imagine Dragons. And that is our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Donald Trump and British Prime Minister Theresa May agreed that Russian President Vladimir Putin's recent statements on nuclear weapons development are irresponsible, according to a readout of President Trump's recent telephone call with the Prime Minister. In a recent speech to the two houses of parliament weeks prior to the Russian presidential election on March 18th, Mr. Putin claimed that Russia has and is on course to develop new additions to its nuclear arsenal, some of which he claims can defeat any missile defenses the U.S. or NATO can deploy. Mr. Putin accompanied his speech with a video animation showing a variety of weaponry, including nuclear-powered underwater vehicles, nuclear-powered cruise missiles, which he boasted had practically unlimited range, and a new heavy intercontinental ballistic missile equipped with a broad range of powerful nuclear warheads. One missile appeared to be targeted at the U.S. southern state of Florida. Department of State spokesperson Heather Nauert said the Kremlin's display of that kind of imagery is not the behavior of a responsible international player. She noted that with his speech and animation, Mr. Putin confirmed what the United States has known for a long time and which Russia has previously denied, that Russia has been developing destabilizing weapons systems for more than a decade. Ms. Nauert declared that President Trump understands the threats facing America and our allies in this century and is determined to protect our homeland and preserve peace through strength. U.S. defense capabilities are and will remain second to none, she added. We have a new defense budget that's over $700 billion. We believe that our military will be stronger than ever. The president's nuclear posture review addresses some of this. It made clear that we're moving forward to modernize our nuclear arsenal and ensure that our capabilities remain unmatched.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.